me, you, Padmasambhava, shape-shifting, and our response to the universe. I'm not completely clear where that title came from either. It definitely was a sort of, like, some of it was there, then I added some, and then you added some, and then it all came together. But hopefully we'll see what happens. So just to the whole kind of signposting thing, so me, you, Padmasambhava, shape-shifting, our response to the universe, that is the sequence that the talk will unfold over, so you'll be able to work out where you are by whether I'm talking about me, you lot, Padmasambhava, or other stuff. So most of us were here this morning for those readings, and I'm not going to necessarily directly refer to them, but hopefully you'll kind of like get little intimations or hints as we go through, and it's like, see little connections. But first of all, a bit about me. So, as I said before we started this morning, those of you who don't know anything about Padmasambhava are in a sense at an advantage, because Padmasambhava is mysterious. So when I joined the Trivatna Buddhist Order 5 years ago, I took on the practice of meditating on Padmasambhava every day, which I do sometimes. I certainly don't do it every day. So it's like I've spent the last 5 years trying to work out, what does Padmasambhava mean? Who is he? What is he? But actually, I've been trying to work out who Padmasambhava is much longer than that. I remember, while we were meditating, I was thinking, I remember my very first Trivatna Festival day 13 years ago, and it was Padmasambhava Day. And I was thinking, I had absolutely no idea what was going on, quite a lot of that day. But something happened, something stuck, and actually, funnily enough, as I think about it, there's little parallels with what I want to say today, with what was being said then. But one of the really interesting things I find about Padmasambhava is that it wasn't his image or his story that I first connected with. Actually, it was his song. So I find that quite interesting. Quite often on introductory courses, we do this thing where we show people, towards the end of the course, we show people different Buddhist images and just ask them what they see, kind of get them to talk about it. And it's interesting that often people do not like the look of Padmasambhava. Maybe you're one of those people, but quite often, I've seen some people get into some quite fierce states of looking at Padmasambhava. They're like, you know, like, look at his face. They're just, look, he's angry. He's aggressive. Don't like it. And then there's this whole business, if you can't see him there so well, you maybe see a bit more on that. On the statue, he's got this trident and it's got severed heads on it. People really kind of react to that for some crazy reason. Severed heads. They're like, isn't Buddhism about peace? It's taken me a while to get used to that, because it's almost like I don't even see it. Like, I just don't react to that stuff at all. It's never been an issue for me. So I've had to kind of try and make sense of why, what's going on there. And as I say, I think partially it's because what I first knew of Padmasambhava was his song, and that's just, for me, is much more uncomplicated. By song, I mean mantra. I mean his mantra. And that communicated something very directly, which we'll find out more about that later, but it's, Padmasambhava is, for me, is just very simple. All about being alive, being full, being open to life. That is all Padmasambhava is. He is energy. He, it. However you want to define him, is all about energy, being alive, being engaged with life. And that kind of works for me. So sometimes I think that's why this is, I have a slight tendency at the moment to give Dharma talks which have very few obvious references to Buddhism. So this is going to be another one of those. But it's all okay, because it's all about life, and the Dharma is all about life. So if we talk about life, it'll be all okay. Waiting for people. So that's me. That's me in a nutshell. What about you? So me, you. So you, well, Buddhism's got a very particular take on you, as most of you will know. Buddhism's particular take on you kind of, come in. Yeah, yeah, come in. Welcome. So Buddhism has got a very particular take on you. And it's, in a way, that's the most important thing we can say. And it very much applies to Padmasambhava as well. Buddhism's take on you is that you are unlimited, open, potential ridden. There is nothing in you but that which can become better. Be yourself, but be yourself at your best. That's what the Dharma is about. That's the invitation. It's an invitation to become all that you can be, all that anyone can be, to become the Buddha. That is all that the Dharma is about. It's an invitation to be ourselves at our best. So there's two important things to clarify with that. The first of all is that we're all doing the best we can. So sometimes when you say to someone, be yourself at your best, then you immediately go, oh God, I'm not at my best, and actually I'm a bit of a mess. That's not the point. It's much more straightforward than that. It's just like you're doing the best you can, and that can always be better for you and for everyone else. That's all the Dharma is about. But then, the other thing we have to be clear is that there's quite a strong implicit assumption in everything that I'm going to say this morning and everything that we're going to do today. And that is that being at our best always includes the qualities of love, awareness of ourselves and others, and a positive energy. That's all that Buddhism assumes. That's all I assume. Is that when we talk about being at our best, when we talk about being fully alive, when we talk about unfolding, when we talk about being open, there's a direct, implicit assumption that includes the qualities of love, awareness, and energy. After that, anything goes. You can be anything that you want to be. All of us can be anything. We're invited to be anything, everything that we want to be, as long as that is with love, with awareness, and with energy. After that, anything goes. So I was very much reminded of this in the passage we listened to a little bit earlier. One of these lines, it says, I am Padmasambhava, the astrologer, mine of the counsellings of the way that leads everyone on his own path. So that's really important to kind of just get in there really kind of centrally. It's like the counsellings of the way, well, the way is love and awareness and energy, but that leads everyone on his or her own path. It's really important to get those two things, because otherwise we can end up feeling a bit rubbish about ourselves, which isn't the point. So that was me. That's us. That's you. An invitation to be ourselves at our best. So often when we think of us being ourselves at our best, something very naturally arises. And it's completely understandable. What arises is all that gets in the way. All the things that stop us being at our best, externally or internally. All the things which block us, limit us, hinder us, we find difficult, painful, whatever that may be. All that gets in the way. And that Padmasambhava is about changing that, transforming that, overcoming that, moving through that. Whatever it may be, it might be fear, conceit, ideas, superficiality, habit, boredom, illness, health, intelligence, stupidity, whatever you want. Come in. Hello. Good morning. Whatever it is that gets in the way, that is, that limits us. And Padmasambhava is nothing if not overcoming limitation. Overcoming limitation in the name of love and awareness and energy. So if we want to boil down all this stuff that gets in the way, if we want to kind of like get really concrete about it, what is it? What is it at its essence? What is it that, before it kind of breaks up into all these different aspects of experience? Well, Here we go, here's a bit of Buddhism. Buddhism would say that it is fixed self-view. It is a view of ourselves as a fixed, permanent, abiding, separate, identifiable, limited self. And this is particularly important, that persists through time. A self which has a past and has a future. And that it is this limitation, this containment, this identification, that is what causes us pain, that is what causes us suffering, that is what limits us. And the Dharma is about transforming that, loosening that, opening. My favourite metaphor of the moment for what Buddhism is about, it's about openness. It's about letting that energy flow more freely. Letting that energy arise and pass away, arise in different forms, in different ways. Just a sense of openness. We are unfolding. Different things happen at different times, and that's all right. Yeah, so fixed self-view. What is that? What does that mean? What do we do about it? So you can get very, very philosophical about this. I'm not particularly motivated in talking about philosophy, although it is important, it is relevant, of course. What can you say very simply about philosophy? Well, simply observe yourself and just see that actually any kind of thing, any time where we think we're fixed, it's just like, actually, if you look closely enough, it's clearly not true, because there's all this different stuff going on. That was very much what I was doing when we were meditating earlier, just kind of noticing. But, you know, the arising and passing away and all these different bits of me. I thought it was quite interesting. I deliberately didn't tell you, those of you who were here this morning, how long we were going to meditate for. I don't know if anyone noticed that. I don't know if anyone struggled with that slightly. That sense of, like, you know, because we want to know what's going to happen. We want to be fixed. It's like, okay, here I am, and I'm meditating, and I'm going to meditate for this long, and then something else will happen, and then I'm going to have a cup of tea, and that, therefore, I know who I am. I know where I am. Kind of placing, containing, identification through time. And actually, just having a moment, it's like, oh, don't know how long we're going to meditate for. Is it 5 minutes? Is it half an hour? Is it an hour? Is it 2 hours? Like, in some ways, I kind of let you off the hook, because you had some kind of sense. I said we're going to meditate for quite a long time, but you also knew that we were going to have a talk before we had lunch. So you kind of, you know, it's not completely out there. You've got some kind of grip on what's going to happen. But it's just, maybe it's just a little bit uncomfortable. It's like, oh, I don't quite know what's going to happen. Well, that's a little invitation into the world of fixed self-view. This is who I am. This is what I do. This is where I go. This is what I feel. Persisting through time. But it's been very relevant to me recently, just noticing the extent to which, this is a central Buddhist teaching, but our relationship with time is what creates quite a lot of our difficulty. If we can be present with an experience moment by moment, that is openness, and that is going to, by and large, treat us well. So I've been saying this a lot in the classes, in the courses I do, that if we're just present with a moment of experience, it's more like if we're sort of grasping onto that, oh, I like this, I want more of this, we kind of stop seeing it. We kind of go into a future. We go into a future and a story and we lose sight of the actual experience. I don't know if you ever have that with eating chocolate. Eating chocolate is my principal example of this. Because it's like, I know I like chocolate. I've got a story from the past that I like eating chocolate. So I stuff it in my gob. And while I'm eating it, I'm thinking about eating the next bit. And I don't really taste the bit that's actually in my mouth. I don't really have that moment of experience because I'm too busy knowing that I like chocolate and thinking about the next bit. And the same is true with, that's a pleasurable experience. So the same is true with pain, actually. mind, you know, to grossly summarise the whole of the mindfulness-based industry that is very usefully making a difference to a lot of people's lives, it all boils down to the simple fact that pain is predominantly experienced in reference to the past and the future. And actually, the moment of experience right here, right now, is never as bad as the stories and the expectations that you are either putting into the future or casting into the past. So you can check that out for yourselves when, you know, the next time you hurt yourself, the next time you get flu, it's like, is the flu and is the cold in itself in this moment painful? Or is it the story of like, oh God, I'm going to, you know, like I'm not going to be able to do this. And if I take time off work, then who the hell's going to do this? And don't want to be ill, don't want to be ill, don't like it, don't want it to last. It's like actually the moment in itself, well, you can see for yourself, sometimes it is painful, of course. Not denying that painful experience exists. But it's the extent to which we kind of tell a story about it, get attached into it or react to it, that creates a lot more of a pain. Certainly that's been my experience, like chronic toothache. Chronic toothache is an unpleasant experience, but the fact that you're freaking out that it's going to last forever makes it a hell of a lot worse than actually just the pain in it at the moment. So there we go. So that in a sense is the problem that we're presented with. That is the human situation. We have a fixed and limited sense of ourselves, and we project into the past and the future, and that just limits us. That limits us, and that in itself is painful. Before you get on to whether any particular experience is pleasurable or painful, so what can we do about it? If nothing else, that's what the Dharma is all about. It's a simple question: what can we do about it? So, before we get on to Padmasambhava, we've got this question of, well, for me it's all about an attitude to life. It's about an attitude to experience. And we can have different attitudes to life. Of course, just be open. It's like, it's very hard to do that. It's like, what the hell does that mean? How the hell do you do that? So we need ways in, don't we? So like one of the ways which I keep on referring back to is a question of stories, actually. We were hearing stories earlier. In a way, Padmasambhava is a storyteller. He's all about the story. Like if you read these, I don't know if you've seen outside, we've got these two quite big books, The Story of Padmasambhava's Life. I have read all of it. If you read it looking for straightforward Buddhist teachings, you will be reading for quite a long time and you will not find very many. It's not really about sort of like the five this and the five that. It's more like it's a story, it's an evocation, it's about a way of life, an attitude of being. Kind of like an image, a world that we can inhabit, that we can engage in. Because the stories we tell ourselves create our world. The stories that we tell ourselves determine how our lives unfold, more than anything else. Stories, attitudes, views, psychological concepts, you know, like story. I mean stories in a fairly like vague sense, like the story of our life, however you want to phrase that. And I think, well, it's not just me. Bhante Sangharakshita, in his Bodhisattva series, talks very interestingly about stories, and he talks about consoling and liberating myths, consoling or liberating stories. I find very interesting, very useful. So a consoling myth is one which justifies inertia, keeps us limited, keeps us stuck, keeps us safe in a funny kind of way. You know this thing of, you know, better the devil you know. So that is a consoling myth. It's like, oh, it's like, it's a, you know, change, unfolding, growth, openness, possibility. It's all a bit scary, so let's just stay here. It's a bit uncomfortable, it's a bit rubbish, but at least we know where we are. A consoling myth of a story that keeps us limited, keeps us safe, but it's kind of like it's a rubbish safety. And there are liberating myths. There are liberating stories which open us up to the possibility of growth, unfoldment, something new happening. It doesn't really matter what it is, with the important prerequisite of it's characterised by love, awareness and energy. doesn't really matter what the story is, as long as it's got those qualities to it, it's going to do us more good. So what consoling and liberating myths, let's get a bit more kind of specific, let's get a bit more embodied. What does that look like? What can that feel like? So I'm going to particularly focus on one kind of consoling myth or attitude, but there's loads of other ones. So an abiding motto of my life, which I've come back to again and again and again: a coward dies a thousand deaths, the hero dies but one.
Boom, 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 boom.
Thunder. There's something about that that's just very directly speaks to my own experience. Coward dies a thousand deaths, the hero dies but one. So the coward dying a thousand deaths, it's all those little what if, what will they, should I, shouldn't I, blah, blah, blah. What if they don't like me? What if they don't find that joke funny? What if that person doesn't remember my name? What if I fail? What if this is a rubbish talk? What if you all have a horrible day? What if, what if, what if, what if, what if? All of those little kind of, and they just drain energy. They just drain energy. There's a consolation about that. Because it's like, it's the story is that you're protecting yourself. Well, what if I go up to that person and say, hi, how's it going? And they can't remember my name. So it's like, so I won't say it, because then I'll be safe, I won't be embarrassed. But actually, it's like, well, you know, you don't engage with another human being. What if they're thinking, God, what was his name? What was her name? I really like talking to them, and I can't remember their name, and I'm embarrassed, and I don't want to say anything. You're just limiting both of your lives. Step in. Step up. Coward dies a thousand deaths, a hero dies but one. So we're going to talk about Padmasambhava for a bit now. Hurrah! We're finally on to Padmasambhava. Who is Padmasambhava? I don't know. But before that, go back to me a bit. So Padmasambhava is all about life and engagement and energy. You know, look, you're really not going to get a lot more conceptual detail from that. So if you're kind of hanging on for kind of like, you know, dates and facts, then sorry, you need to read the book. But he's all about engagement, engaging with us. He's called the second Buddha. According to some traditions, he's the second Buddha because Shakyamuni Buddha kind of said it how it is. But then we get to this important point that we're stuck, we're limited, we're fixed. We find it difficult to take that on. We find it difficult to become the Buddha. So Padmasambhava came along to kind of get into our guts, kind of move our energy, help us be all that we can be, whatever that looks like. So, how does Padmasambhava help me be all that I can be? Well, first of all, I've got to engage with him. I've got to come alive to him. So this is personal reflection, and obviously in a way, all you can do is kind of think, well, what would that look like for me? What would that mean for me? Maybe you'll connect with it as well, who knows? So last year I was living at a retreat centre called Padmaloka, and at a particular time I was really trying to get into Padmasambhava more, trying to make it more alive. And I actually went to a very senior order member called Padmavajra, who's one of the most influential people in our movement. And I said to him, I want to get more into Padmasambhava, tell me what book to read. And he just said, you know, tell me about you. Tell me about you. Tell me about what interests you, what excites you, what engages you. So it was quite a stimulating conversation. I found myself talking quite a lot about heroes. Believe it or not, somewhere under this T-shirt, you can see Superman's lurking there. It's a kind of funny, slightly dark version of Superman, but there you go. For me, it's a lot to do with heroes. That really moves me. I was talking with Colin the other day, actually. We were talking about, I can't remember how we got onto it, we were talking about human beings. You know, it's like heroes doesn't just mean Superman flying through the sky. We're looking in the issue of The Guardian, which was on his kitchen table, and these just very moving stories of people's lives. It's like, God, intense, really strong. And the important point about heroes, the important point at this point of the talk, is that heroes never set out to be heroes. Nobody ever says, today I'm going to go out and be a hero. All heroes do is do what they've got to do. All heroes do is, I'm going to frame this in the negative, all heroes do is say, I cannot turn away. That's all they ever do. All they do is say, I can't, that's not okay. They've got to do something. They don't know what they're going to do often. But all they know is that whatever the situation they're faced with, it's like they've got to engage. They've got to get involved. They cannot turn away. I think on the byline of our day, we had the phrase, can you be separated from your ideals? That was the first phrase we had. So to be a hero is to not only not be separated from your ideals, but to live up to them in whatever form or shape that takes. All it means is that moment when you're like, and we all have them, because we all have them every day, because life is difficult and scary and hard. So we all have these moments when we see something and we tell the consoling myth. We tell the story where we're like, we see something over here, it might be positive, it might be negative, it might be something not okay, it might be something really beautiful and fantastic and wonderful. But there's this little bit in us which goes, does that? Like for me, I definitely feel it. I feel it when I close down. I feel that moment when my fixed, limited self goes, bit scary, no thank you. Possibility of change, possibility of something new happening, just going to walk away now. Just going to pretend I didn't see that, it didn't happen. It can be anything. It can be absolutely anything. It can be saying to someone, I don't think you should have said that, that was cruel, can you apologise, you shouldn't have said that about my friend, it's not true. It can be saying to someone, that was fantastic, I really appreciate that, tell me more, I want to know more, I really appreciate that, thank you. Saying thank you can be a really opening thing to do, actually, just expressing that. Stepping into that space of acknowledging that something has made a difference to us, that is a heroic act. So heroes just act. They just do what needs to be done. They just move. And Padmasambhava, this is the little bit of actual story about Padmasambhava's actual life, so enjoy it while it lasts. Padmasambhava, this is the realization I had last year. Padmasambhava isn't like a superhero. He is a superhero. This is the decisive point. Like if you like, let's just take his life and compare it to other well-known figures. Padmasambhava had a mysterious birth. He came from another place. Superman, tick. Hooray! Just the same. Padmasambhava was born into a good family which cared and nurtured for him. Superman. Tick. That's good, isn't it? I assume everyone at least vaguely knows the story of Superman. If you don't, then you'll just have to cope. Padmasambhava came from a mysterious place. He was born into a good family. But that good family kind of, it limited him. He couldn't be all that he could be. So I don't know if you remember, there's this very striking bit. In the Man of Steel films, Man of Steel film, where Kevin Costner is sort of saying, Kevin Costner is blocking Superman's energy. He's saying, it's not safe. He's saying, it's not safe. You can't go out. It's dangerous. Bad things will happen. You don't understand. Just stay here with us. Just be a good, normal boy. Superman's energy is just getting really blocked, and he keeps on, can't help himself, because he's a hero. He's got to step in, he's got to do something to help people, even though he knows that it's going to be complicated, and what if the feds find out, and blah, 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 but he kind of can't help himself. Padmasambhava was blocked by being in a palace. He had to leave home and wander as well, just as Superman does. You remember that whole series of montage shots where he's going around being a wanderer and helping people. Padmasambhava did the same thing. He wandered, he meditated, he learned more deeply. But then Padmasambhava, that in a way, and this is supposition, it's like in a way that's not enough. A hero, all of us, a hero needs a call. We need something to do. We need a meaning to our lives, separate from ourselves. So Padmasambhava, he's meditating in these graveyards, having all these crazy experiences. But then he gets the call to go to Tibet. and bring the Dharma to Tibet. That was the last bit of that story we heard. Tibet was a very dangerous, degenerate, kind of demon-ridden country, and people wanted Buddhism there, but Buddhism was all very like nicey-nicey, and it wasn't cutting it, so they needed Padmasambhava to come in and really meet that energy and transform it. And that's what he did, and that's what made Padmasambhava in. That's what made Padmasambhava the man he is. You can debate about that, that's not entirely true. Just the same with Clark Kent. Clark Kent needed to find that challenge to become Superman. You can't, you know, he's just kind of wandering around saving people here and there, and it's something about that challenge which brought him to fulfillment, brought the most out of him. So Padmasambhava isn't like a superhero, he is a superhero. But then, the question arises, if so, what's his power? What is Padmasambhava's power? And that brings us on to the next section, the next phase, shape-shifting. Padmasambhava has many powers. A few of you said to me in the tea break about that reading of I am Padmasambhava the this, I am Padmasambhava the that. It's like it sounds like he's everything. Well, he kind of is, but he kind of isn't as well. Padmasambhava's power is to shapeshift, to respond to what is needed. The energy is flowing, it's open, it's dynamic, it's not fixed. Referring back to what I was saying at the start, Padmasambhava does not have a fixed self-view. He can respond to whatever situation he finds himself in appropriately, spontaneously. In fact, all superheroes are shapeshifters. All superheroes shapeshift between their kind of their normal everyday self, poor old Peter Parker who gets beaten up and can't get the girls, and Spider-Man for another form where energy is flowing, where possibility unfolds. That liberation of energy. So actually, all superheroes shapeshift. But what about us? That is the question, of course. Because again, a few of you said, well, the thing is, you listen to that and it's like, well, Padmasambhava is a bit like God. He's a bit not like us, anyway, that's for sure. So that's a consoling myth to say that. To say, oh, Padmasambhava, oh, great and powerful one, poor old, you know, Padmasambhava up here, me down here. Nothing we can do about it. That is a consoling myth. That lets us off the hook of engaging our energy, transforming our energy. And Padmasambhava is all about us. He's not about him. He's about us. He's about us liberating our energy. So please take that with you. That Padmasambhava is about liberating our energy. He solely exists to help us do that. So how do we liberate energy? Where is the energy blocked? When I say liberate energy, I mean the fixed self-views, the stories, the ideas, the assessments, all of that stuff which kind of stops us unfolding. Like this, you know, Buddhism's view of us is that we all have the potential to be a Buddha. So if we're not being a Buddha, that must mean that we've got blocked energy, because Buddha's energy just flows. So where is the energy blocked? How is it blocked? Or that's going too far. Where is the energy not liberated, not flowing? So that brings us back to the first reading, for those of you who weren't here, was all about Padmasambhava overcoming demons and making them take vows. So he overcomes the demon, and then the demons take a vow. Demons means sort of psychic, unrefined energy, the bits of us that hold us back, the bits of us that limit us. Just to be clear, they don't mean physical demons. So I think you can look at this in two ways, and we're going to come back to the superhero thing, because I like superheroes. So our energy can be blocked. We can be kind of limited, we can't move, we can be stuck. Like Superman, I think Superman is blocked actually, or prior to, you know, at that point of the story, he's blocked, his energy is not freely flowing. He's stuck, he can't act, he can't do anything, he's got all this power, but it's not moving. So he needed to liberate that energy, he needed to access something. And he does that through taking on a mask, taking on an identity, becoming Superman. He needed to step up to his potential. Some of us can be overwhelmed. We're not always... Come in. And certainly this can be what it's like, particularly when we think of emotional energy, which is probably the most important thing to think about or area to look at. Sometimes we don't feel like our energy is blocked. We feel overwhelmed by our energy. It's like there's too much. We can't control it. That can particularly be the case with negative, painful emotional states. If we get very angry, if we get paranoid, if we get depressed, if we get jealous. It's not that the energy's blocked. It's just like it's kind of us. It's going through us. Because remember, our definition of energy in this case is energy that is loving, that is wise, that is for the benefit of other people. So if we've got all this energy going on and it's causing us and other people pain, then that energy needs to be transformed, it needs to be turned. We're being overwhelmed by our energy. And for me, the metaphor for being overwhelmed by our energy, the character who most clearly represents that is Batman. Batman is... I like that. I feel quite pleased with myself with that thought. But Batman is overwhelmed by his emotional experience. Batman, this is what you have to understand, just going for a moment into superhero theory. But Batman is overwhelmed by his experience. He needs a mask to protect his sanity. If Batman didn't have a mask, he would be like a degenerate psychopathic thug. You know, because he's got all this rage, all this hatred, all this pain within him. He needs to channel it. He needs the mask to be able to channel that energy for the good, because he does channel it for the good. He directs it towards caring and protecting beings in a slightly violent kind of ninja way. But nonetheless, he is protecting people. So in a way, Batman needs a vow. That's the thing, this demonic energy. If you remember in these stories, the demonic energy, Pamasambhava has to tame that energy, and then he gives it a vow, and then he gives it a treasure. So that's if we've got an overwhelming kind of like messy energy, well, we need to kind of channel that in a way which is constructive, kind of focus that in, channel it, and give it a vow, give it a name, give it a form. This is setting you up for this afternoon if you haven't realised, masks. So these, I think, broadly speaking, we probably have all kinds of different areas in each of us. Parts of us are blocked, parts of us are overwhelmed. Both of them we need to kind of make friends with, liberate. And in some ways, well, what we're exploring today, because the Buddhist path, of course, has loads of different ways of engaging, but what we're exploring today is kind of moving that energy, shifting it, letting it unfold, liberating that energy, whether it be blocked or overwhelmed. And there's different ways of doing this, there's different ways of being. But I think the most important thing for me is the simple principle that, again, we are not fixed. There is these stories, these consoling stories we tell of ourselves, which kind of keep it all together, whether that be blocked or being overwhelmed. Both of them are keeping it together. Like if you're just lost in jealousy or anger or depression or fear, you're really fixed in that moment. I don't know if you've experienced that, but you know, when you're really, you know, really strongly just identified, overwhelmed by an emotional experience, it's very fixed actually, it's very limited, because you are that emotion. It's just like, I am this. So actually kind of getting a handle on it is a way of liberating ourselves. But the crucial lesson to learn, if there's no other lesson to learn, at least from what I'm saying, if not from today, is that there's different ways of being, and all it takes is one step. It just takes one step. Life will be different. It's not forever. It doesn't have to be forever. It doesn't even have to be more than for the next 10 seconds. Just kind of like let something new unfold. Try something new. Be something new. You can even wear a mask to do it. That's handy, isn't it? This afternoon, for those of you who don't know, we're doing mask making workshops, which is an opportunity to explore this for yourselves. So here we are. here's me, I'm identified with being how I am, I do this, I do that. It's all very normal, it's all very kind of contained. Just do something slightly different. Put on a bit of tinsel. See how you feel. Going to go up to someone here who you don't know and say, hi, what's your name? Maybe you need to put a mask on to do that because that's a bit scary. Maybe you need to put a mask on to maybe you need to put a mask on to acknowledge the strength of the emotion that flows through you. And actually the mask helps you acknowledge that and helps you not be solely identified with that. Because the thing about masks is you can put them on and you can take them off again. So you can kind of, you can have that mask of, you know, your intense emotionality, put it on, and it allows you to objectify away from that, which allows you to experience it a bit, which then allows you to take it off again. Our response to the universe. In a way, our response to the universe is very simple, very straightforward. It is for me. When I was thinking about this talk, I was thinking about kind of the ecological crisis, the mess in the political system, the economic crisis, all the pain and suffering we're faced with in this world. And just the question comes, what on earth can we do about it? What on earth can we do? And for, I don't know about all of you, but there is a strong habitual tendency in me, and I perceive it in others, to go from that space to a limited, to a fixed, to a shut down space, to tell a consoling story of this, oh, there's nothing I can do, it's all too much, I can't cope, you know, like, oh, did you see what, all of this limitation, which causes us pain. Nothing else, it causes us pain. And it means that nothing happens. Well, it's, you know, obviously we're on a sliding spectrum, so something happens. I'm sure many of us give to Oxfam, you know, a part of WaterAid, recycle our bottles, blah, 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 try and buy organic food. So, of course, we do all of that. So it's on a sliding spectrum. It's always on a sliding spectrum. That's so, so important. But our response to the universe, Padmasambhava's response to the universe, is uncompromisingly simple. It is uncompromisingly simple. If we grow, if we open, if we unfold with love and awareness and energy that is aware and considerate of ourselves and others, then we're doing the best we can. We're doing the best we can. And that's all anyone, anything can ask of us. Every moment makes a difference. Every moment of awareness makes a difference. And in some ways it feels, although actually I don't feel scared saying this, but it feels slightly scary saying that, because we live in a world which doesn't believe that. We live in a world which says, it's all too big, it's all too difficult, there's nothing you can do, it's all too much. But actually every moment makes a difference, and the next moment will be different. The moment after the next will be different if this moment is different. The heroes. Heroes, for me, heroes are like they're an abiding myth in our culture. All cultures have those abiding myths. Like, it may be occurred to you that when I was speaking about Padmasambhava earlier and the sort of the phases of his life and connecting them with Superman, actually you can choose, there's myriad heroes, there's myriad figures all throughout history, all throughout myth, who fulfill that basic function, because they're telling us something really important about life. They're telling us something really important about life. Like when I was doing it, I was thinking about this yesterday, I thought, I could be telling the story of Jesus. Actually, like, you know, a mysterious birth, limitation, wilderness, making a difference in the world. That could be Jesus, actually. It's the same myth. It's the same basic story. And all every hero knows is that simple basic truth. Right now, in this moment, this is what I must do. That's all anyone can ask of you. That's all Padmasambhava asks of us, is that in that moment we let our energy flow, we unfold, we do whatever it is that we feel it's the right thing to do. And we all, I'm convinced of this, we all feel it when we don't. We all feel it. That little moment where there's something inside of you and you go, scary. That for me, I suppose that for me is the predominant one. Maybe for you it's something different, so translate as you need to. But that moment where we go, scary, close down. And what Padmasambhava is the energy, the encouragement, the support to just do whatever it is, that tiny little moment, which means rather than going, we go, who knows what will happen? Who knows where we will be, what will happen? And a lot of the time, it's really, really small. A lot of the time, it is very, very simple. It's not, you know, like that's where you have to, again, you have to be careful with the consoling myth thing. You know, it's like, oh, you know, Superman, oh, you know, Mother Teresa, oh, Padmasambhava, oh, whoever it is. It's like, they are big and I am small. That is a consoling myth. That is not what they want us to hear. I remember being very, very struck, you know, like, well, when I was at university talking about the ecological crisis, actually, and I was talking to a guy, a student who was, I've got no idea what it was, but he was off demonstrating at Trident nuclear bases or whatever it is. And I started saying to him, it's like, oh yeah, and I'm rubbish and I'm not doing anything. It's like, there you are being a good eco-hero off, you know, changing the world, and here I am, little old me, rubbish, useless, not doing anything. And he saw this truth, because he pinned me. In the moment he said, no, just do what you can, and that is enough. It's really, that is that in a way, that's the central point. Just do what you can. That is enough. Whatever that looks like, open to energy. That is what Padmasambhava is. It's openness to letting that energy that is you unfold. Take whatever form and shape it needs to. Let it, and this is that why we're talking about energy. It's about guts. It's not about heads. It's not about our minds. It's like letting ourselves become more. Of course, it includes our mind because ideas are so important. But it's like letting that energy transform us. Padmasambhava believes in us. That is his superpower. Padmasambhava's superpower is he believes in us. And he invites us to be all that we can be.